Hello and welcome to The Business of Authority. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Rochelle Moulton.
And today we're going to talk about kicking off 2022.
Yay! I love years that have double numbers in them.
Oh, you know?
Yeah, like 22, 33, 44. Yes. Yeah, love it.
You're a numbers person, so.
Yeah.
Well, we are definitely feeling the holiday cobwebs are still kind of like shaking those out, but, right?
Definitely.
Yeah, more extra coffee this morning. So this is the first show that we are recording in 2022, post-holidays, and on New Year's Day, I think it was, I sent out an email to the list about, it just said, Happy New Year, and it was just a question for folks, what is your objective for 2022, and bonus points if you have a strategy for achieving that objective, and in spite of the fact that everybody was, you know, autoresponders were firing like crazy.
I could tell
my email program was working because I got probably, you know, 30 out of office replies. But I also got maybe 70 or 80. I don't know. I haven't even been able to read through them all yet. But I got a ton of people who wrote back with their business objective for this year and strategies for achieving it. And I have to say, I don't know if my expectations were too low or something, but the ones I've read so far are generally really good. Mm. So yeah, so I applaud the listeners and the readers of the list. Maybe something's working because historically the word strategy especially is horribly misunderstood, and people will sort of use it interchangeably or synonymously with tactics all the time. It's like, oh, have you got a strategy for, you know, I don't know, increasing your open rates on mobile? And it's like, well, that's not, I mean, a strategy is like, to me, a strategy is like, it becomes more important, and it is, I think, more critical to understand at a longer time scale. So it's more useful with a bigger objective, where you've got an objective that you're not going to change probably for a year, 2 years, maybe even longer. And you'll come up with a strategy that you are going to stick to for a non-trivial amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the whole key with it. Like, it's not that you need to stick to a strategy that's clearly not working, but the objective should change the most slowly. Your strategy should be the next thing that you have some grit and stick-to-itiveness about. But the tactics are disposable. And what the strategy is there for is to help you separate tactics, good tactics from bad tactics, or good and bad, it's kind of judgy. It's more like effective tactics and distracting tactics. So there are certain things that you could do, tactics that you could do that pull you in two different directions at once. So they are perhaps both tactics that someone used in the past. Not you, but someone that you follow online maybe used this particular tactic to achieve some objective. And it worked wonderfully well. And you're like, oh, I'm going to use that tactic too because I have the same objective. But then you pick another tactic from someone else who used a different strategy to reach the same thing. And those two tactics could sort of like mutually cancel themselves out or are just sending the wrong message or whatever. They just don't resonate with each other.
Well, they can become a distraction because they're working at odds with each other.
Yeah. So at the very least, you put yourself in a situation where you can be just wasting resources doing, you know, like either a too small amount. How would you say that? Like a bunch of things, a little bit, none of which are going to get you over the hump. Or you could be doing things that are actually pulling in the wrong direction. So let me give you an example. Like, I like a movie example. So in the original Star Wars, not to date myself, but I think everyone's seen that by now. The original Star Wars, the objective at the end of the first movie was to destroy the Death Star. That is the objective, destroy the Death Star. The strategy was to send an absurdly small force of tiny ships to exploit a critical vulnerability. So they, you know, and then the tactics are like, okay, you know, Gold Squadron, Red Leader, you guys are going to do it here. And then you guys are going to go over there and we're going to sneak through the, you know, all the little details. And then Luke gets into the trench And as he's approaching the exhaust port, he turns off his targeting machine, his targeting computer. And they're like, Luke, your targeting computer's offline. He's like, right?
I can't believe you remember all this detail.
Oh, you kidding me? Yeah. This movie is imprinted on my DNA. But the point is, when he turned off the targeting computer, it was a tactical decision. He did not change his objective or the strategy. It was still in line with both things. Imagine if the objective was to destroy the Death Star and the leaders didn't present them with a strategy. They just said, do whatever. Well, should we sneak in or should we do a full frontal assault? Whatever. You do whatever you think is right. And that's what a lot of people do with when they're just doing tactics with no strategy. So like maybe the objective for the year is, I don't know, have $1 million in the bank. And they'll do tactics from a full frontal assault and a sneak attack. So obviously, if you can just picture, like, okay, here we go. We're going to attack the Death Star. And like, but a whole bunch of people are trying to sneak around the back. Like, shut up. We're trying to sneak in. You know, it's like, it's not, you get these two different sets of tactics that are wrecking the other one. So, you know, so anyway, that's so the importance of a strategy is to make sure that all of the actions that you take and the resources that you deploy are all working together and they're all resonating with each other, multiplying the effectiveness of each so that you're not just wasting time and money, basically. I mean, that really boils down to that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's alignment is really how I think about it. I mean, I had my head in this all last year writing the book. Right. Because it's about once you position yourself, then you know who it is you care about, what revolution you're going to be leading, you know, who's your ideal client and buyer. Then you can start creating a strategy to develop the products and services that will help you to monetize what you're trying to do, the revolution you're trying to lead.
Yep. Yeah. So when I was getting these emails back, I was expecting a lot of confusion around specifically the strategic part. I was expecting a lot of people to say, I'm going to flood LinkedIn with videos, or I'm going to start a YouTube channel or a podcast, or I'm going to write every day, or, you know, these are all, those are all more at the tactical level where, you know, I'm going to guest on as many podcasts as I can. It's not really a strategy. That's like an action that you're going to take. The strategy is, I've got it, I actually have a definition of it, but it's so long. I put myself on the spot and trying to remember it. It's much longer than I like, but I don't think you can take many of the pieces out. But backing up, an objective is like some kind of easily measurable outcome. We want, you know, we want men on the moon by the end of the decade, or, you know, something very clear and easy to measure, easy to tell if it worked or it didn't. So that's a good objective. And the strategy gets trickier. But it's a high level, a concise high level approach to achieving the objective by pitting strengths against weaknesses, usually in a surprising way. And I hate how long that is because it offends my songwriter sensibility. But I think some of the second half is a little bit optional if you're not in a zero-sum competition. But I think the key piece is that it needs to be concise and high level. It needs to be in service of reaching this easily measurable, clear objective. And usually it's going to be by playing strengths against weaknesses, because none of us have a $1 billion marketing budget. We need to be clever about how we apply our resources. So what are your strengths and how are you going to apply them to weak points in the market or weaknesses in whatever it is that you're trying to surmount? And then in a surprising way, I think is critical whenever you have a direct competitor or you're in some kind of zero sum situation. I think the surprising way piece, I think it's useful even when you're in a infinite game.
I wouldn't restrict it. I push for surprising, you know, because you can always pull it. You can always pull it back. But if you're just kind of, I do this and I'm this and there are these people and this is what we do, the surprise is what captures people's attention as long as it's consistent with everything else. I mean, it shouldn't be surprising in a weird way. It should be surprising in an aligned way.
Right. You know, like the perfect surprise is when as soon as someone says it, you're like, I never would have thought of that, but that's brilliant.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
It's like instantly mm-hmm. a great idea. And now, here's the other thing about strategy is, if it can't fail, it's not a strategy. So there's always a risk that it was the wrong bet. You are making a bet that this approach is going to work. And if you're wrong, then, you know, it's not going to work. So, you know, people come to me in coaching and like, they're like, oh, well, but what if it doesn't work? I'm like, then we'll do something else. But like, a lot of people, of course, want a guarantee that all of the time and money that they're going to spend on the tactics are going to pay off. And it's like, I can't guarantee that.
No.
They might
unfortunately.
Not.
Unfortunately.
Right? But if you make, but you can come up with a strategy that isn't like it's not impossible to look at a strategy and be like, this is a category error. Like, this is not a strategy, or this doesn't align with your objective. I don't see how this aligns with the objective. So there's a lot of alignment things that can make this strategy well formed and say like, okay, this is feasible. It's reasonable. It's clever. It could work. And then it's a question of like, okay, like executing against it. We can change tactics all day long and then see how that goes. But then at a certain point, maybe, you know, you got to bail at a certain point. But honestly, it doesn't happen that often.
Well, you know what, though? I want to just throw this out, and I'm racking my brain trying to remember who said this. And it was somebody who wrote a book about it. So I can find him and maybe put it in the show notes. So I was listening to an interview with this guy who said one of the biggest mistakes that people like us tend to make is we leave our idea too early. Mm-hmm. That we spend all this time thinking about our big idea, building a business around it, creating products and services, and then we leave. And a lot of times we stop just before the breakthrough.
Mm. It could have been The Dip by Seth Godin.
No, it's a guy I've never heard of before, but he was on, I think it was the Accidental Creative podcast.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Todd Henry. He was a guest on that podcast. And I love that idea because, now remember, that audience is a heavily creative one. Mm. And the more creative you are in theory, the more ideas you have. And so you tend to let a lot of them go, right? Yeah. And so you just go, okay, well, nothing happened with that one. Now it's time to turn to the next one. But I love that idea because I think sometimes we give up on tactics too soon. Right. If we agree that strategy is a non-trivial amount of time, I think tactics, you have to give it enough time for whatever the tactic is to
true.
Prove whether it works or not. So somebody will say, oh, I was on Twitter for 2 weeks and nothing happened.
Yeah, I blogged every day for a week and it's nothing yet.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Like, so, I planted seeds this morning and there are no tomatoes yet. Like, yes, certain things are going to take a while or a certain amount of time to bear fruit. Yes, there's lead time on things for sure. Right. So, okay. So I speaking for myself, well, for one of my favorite emails that I got back, I haven't read them all yet, and I will go through them. In case you sent me an email, I will read it. But my favorite one came back. my favorite one so far was objective. Make more, do less, strategy, raise prices. It's like, that's great. That's great. It's like, it's funny. It's a little surprise angle. It's just so short, so concise, so high level.
You gotta love it. And yeah. I can almost hear that person in my head reciting that as their mantra, like an internal mantra. It's not something you'd say to clients necessarily, but it's And I think that's really powerful.
Right.
Yeah. Applaud.
Yeah, but I got a lot of them. I get some were more detailed than others. The longer they are, the more nervous they make me because the strategy should be concise, high level. It should be easy. If you have a team, especially, I mean, if we're soloist, it's a little bit perhaps less of an issue, but it's still an issue of being able to remember it and stick to it. You know, if you have a team, it's really obvious where like, if you pulled a team member aside and we're like, okay, what's our strategy for 2022? And they can't say it. That's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but they could say raise prices. Okay, I got it.
Yeah.
So, I find personally that I like to go in a kind of annual cadence where I've got I've got maybe a 10-year general kind of grow the business kind of, you know, always want to be having a bigger impact, reaching more people, turning on more light bulbs. That's sort of the purpose of the business. But each year, I usually have one area that I focus on improving. That's kind of my objective for the year, or transformation or transition that I want to make for that year. And in 2021, it was, I can actually remember 2020 and 2020. 2020 got nuked by COVID, but...
But you can remember it.
But I can remember it.
Yeah, yeah. That's good.
And 2021 was move over to subscription for as like everything. I haven't completed all of it, but well on the way to completing that. So that transition is well underway, and I'm loving the way it's working. And this year, the objective was to reach more people while working less. And there's sort of this tacit, like, and not decreasing my lifestyle. So I want to like maintain or increase the revenue, moving everything over to subscription so I can work less. And so the objective for this year is, you know, specific numbers, increase revenue by 20% at least, decrease hours from 7 per week to 4, and so that I can write full time. And the strategy is to automate everything I can and get rid of anything I can't. So I'll still be...
That sounds like the strategy for the last 5 years.
but for real, like, so yeah. I like automating stuff, and it's fun, and I do a little bit of it, but there's way more stuff. It's all the little stuff, right? It's all the little stuff. It's like, I'll just do this manually. I'll just make a manual invoice. It's all these little tiny things that add up that are not providing value. It provides no value to anyone that I'm doing them manually. It's all that stuff that should just happen. And I've got a laundry list of probably a dozen or two dozen things that I do manually that no one will care if I don't do manually. In fact, they'll like it better if they don't have to email me and say, hey, could you send me an invoice or whatever the thing is. Onboarding, just robotic stuff that I do now with an SOP, where I'm just copying and pasting from an SOP, it should just be automatic. So they don't have to wait for their welcome message when they get into group coaching or something. So, you know, when you add all those things up, maybe it's not as much time per week as it seems like, but it's a lot of it feels like a lot. It feels like a lot of cognitive overhead. It's annoying.
Yeah. Like, cause your brain has to shift from doing this one thing to the other, to the other, to the other.
Right. So yeah. So I'm super excited about the idea, but you know, it's still up in the air. I'm still kind of finalizing stuff. I do want to like actually make the list of like, how many things could I automate? How many things really can't be automated? But yeah, so the objective is just be writing full time basically, and have everything else, all the robotic stuff that I've been doing manually, just happen automatically.
Well, I want to make sure about halfway through the year, we talk about how the automation is coming, because I am, you know, personally, I'm just so interested in that. And I'm spending my first week in January heavily on that. So I want to hear how it's going.
Cool. Well, I'll keep everyone posted.
Yeah. So I can't quite say as much as you are, because I'm in the throes of something. But I think the way that I would say it is, for 2021, my goal was to move to 100% coaching, because I was still doing strategy work. I don't call strategy work execution, but it's execution in the sense that I'm doing something for a client, even though it's strategy, right? And so I really wanted to move to 100% coaching, and I did that in 2021. Cool. So yeah, that was pretty exciting. And for 2022, I've got a few things that I want to do. I've got a revenue goal, which is a big bump in revenue. And part of that is kind of where you were last year, which is I want to increase my subscriptions. Mm-hmm. And that means Authority Nation. And then I'm also looking at exactly how to translate the reception for the book into what comes next. What I found with a book which came out in very early November is that a lot of people are still working through the workbook. And so I'm kind of curious about what kinds of support, help, community they're looking for with that. So I'm in the process of listening because I'm not sure what the right answer is and I don't want to make an assumption. And then the other thing I'm working on, and I'm a little afraid to say this out loud, but here goes, is in the consulting profession, there's still less than 30%, somewhere between 25 and 30% of consultants are women. And what I'd really like to see over the next 5 to 10 years, so I feel really good about my contribution to the profession, is I'd like to see more women in independent consulting that are rocking it, that are that they've claimed a big revolution, they are making money hand over fist, they are serving the right audience, all of those things. So I'm looking at designing a program just for women. And I've never done that in my whole career. It's always just been about consultants. And so I'm doing a lot of listening, especially in January. I'm not interested in creating sort of a, you know, a, what some have called a pink ghetto, where we go and commiserate about how stuff isn't working. I'm not interested in that. This is about really seizing the reins and taking our respective businesses to a different level. So that's what, you know, I'm really, and maybe you can tell from my voice, I'm really excited about that, but I'm not exactly sure how to describe it yet.
Yeah.
And then related to all that, and for me, it was driven home at the end of the year with my bookkeeping system is, you know, I've talked before about, you know, my VA leaving and I've been VA-less for a while, is that I do not want to live like that anymore. So I have, this week I have an interview with two bookkeepers. I have an interview with a guy who listened to the podcast and said, you know, having a VA isn't your problem. Your problem is, you'll love this, Jonathan, is that your systems are not working together. You need more automation. Mm-hmm. I said, I will take a call on that topic. So that's happening this week. And I also have a meeting with a classic VA who was referred to me by a listener. So yeah, I'm heavily into doing less of the things that I really don't want to do, but doing them in a way that's going to allow me to grow my business versus just take annoying tasks off my plate.
Right. Mm-hmm. Cool. So as you can hear, I mean, I think both of us are still in this kind of refining phase. I mean, you definitely are explicitly are still in this refining phase. I still feel like my articulation needs to be clearer of mine, but that's where the sort of, to give use ourselves as an example of the kind of things or the level or altitude that we're thinking about it, hopefully is helpful. The other thing to point out, right? I mean, like, imagine two people that want to like increase their impact, dramatically increase their impact and make more money doing it, right? So we both kind of have that similar objective, but our strategies are totally different. And if we were mixing, like, they wouldn't mix. Like, I mean, certainly the automation piece does, but they don't really mix. Like, if I kinda was doing both, like, oh, I'm kind of thinking like I want to create more. Well, for example, if your strategy from last year, like, go all to coaching, I'm like going away from that at the same time. But we've got the similar objective, right? Yeah. So it's like, okay, that. So if I was both trying to grow more, like get more leads in my pipeline for private coaching, one-on-one people, at the same time trying to decrease the number of hours that I need to be on the phone so that I can write more, well, it just doesn't make sense. Like, it's not going to work. So that would be an example of, I'm trying to come up with an example of like where you're using two strategies or you have no strategy and you're just trying to like, you know, grab every opportunity because, like, money, grab it, money, grab it, money, grab it.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Well, I was just thinking in 2021, you know, I wanted to move to coaching 100%, but it wasn't one to one or one to many. It was both. Oh,
fair. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which you could argue is, you know, too much detail. But for me, it was about changing how I worked. And I have to say, one of the things that I really enjoyed about 2021, I worked a lot less. I really did. And when I say work, I mean, preparation was easier. It was more joyful. And I shouldn't say I worked less. I'm not convinced I worked fewer hours, but it felt like I did because I was enjoying it more. Right. I felt lighter. I had a lot more fun business-wise. I mean, you know, life was just so crazy for everybody in 2021. But business-wise, I had so much fun in 2021.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where, like, it does get weird. Like, you know, my average hours last year was like 7 hours a week. But what am I measuring? You know, like, and it's kind of like what you said, because half the time I feel like I'm retired. I'm just like, you know, it's like, okay, but, you know, I start thinking about, well, how am I going to increase the impact, right? Like, if the mortgage is paid, right, like, I'm not worried about that. When you're not worried about that stuff and you're kind of at the, you know, like, you're past the survive mm-hmm. stage and you're getting into the right. thrive stage. And it's like, okay, well, what do I want to do? Do I want to go, like, onesie, twosie, having, like, an hour-long phone call with one person? It's like 1,000 people could listen to this phone call if it was on my podcast. You know, but I couldn't charge the same for it, but 1,000 people could, or 2,000, 10,000 maybe could listen. Well, infinite technically, but I mean,
right.
But like a lot of people would stand to benefit from that hour that I just spent instead of just this one person. Now this one person is going to benefit a lot from it.
Yeah.
Right. Because they're just like, oh my God, that unlocked a whole new category, a whole new line of business in my mind or whatever. But if I could publish that, you know what I mean? It just feels like
it's impact. Feels,
right. It feels like I'm lifting up a car with my hands instead of with a lever. So it feels like I don't want people who I have individual phone calls with to think it feels like, oh, it's work and draining. But it's just not, it's just the feeling of it being under leveraged makes it feel like work to me. So, like, I like doing it, but I'm like, this feels like a waste, kind of.
It's really interesting because I think some of this, too, goes back to our genius zone. Because there will be people listening to this going, oh, I would be happy as a clam if I were coaching people one-to-one all day. They would love to do that because it ties to who they are, what motivates them, all of that. But yeah, it's not the best business model. So it's finding that balance. And I kept thinking as you were talking about this, I kept visualizing Maslow's hierarchy of need. Remember right. the triangle?
Yes, yes, yes.
And so yeah, the higher up we go, the more it's about, I don't want to say influence. I guess impact is maybe the best word because it's about how you feel actualized, and most of us feel actualized when we're helping other people. You know, it's not really about, oh, I want to go to the spa every day and mm-hmm. have a massage. It's about how can I help the people I care most about, and that's what we do as we move up that triangle.
Mm. Yeah, right. So for me, it's all about community and like getting more the different kind of pyramid, but just like a broader base pyramid instead of like a tall. Mm-hmm. Skinny, pointy pyramid, you know, right. like the Washington Monument. Yeah. I want like a real wide, flat pyramid. So that you could almost, in my head, it's like visual like that. It's almost like a visualization of my last strategy for the last couple of years is like spread the message, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, one of the things that I didn't say, because it's not a strategy, it's more of a tactic, but I'm going to be doing a lot more podcast guesting this mm-hmm. year. And I've done a lot right after the book. And I love the after part, right? The after part is when it gets aired and people start interacting with the message.
Right.
And whether it's on social media or they send me an email, it's like, I feel like, yes, okay, people are hearing this and they're acting on it. And that's what most of us want, right? We want to move mm-hmm. the needle.
Yeah, right. And that's a tactic, right? It's like go on a podcast tour, start, you know, do a daily mailing list, have a YouTube channel, start interacting on Clubhouse or whatever, or like TikTok, or like whatever the new...
Oh, just not TikTok. TikTok. I don't want to do that.
Well, I don't like any of them, but...
I love watching them, actually. I think they're really fun, but I don't want to do one.
Right. So, yeah. So with the tactics, once you have a clear objective and you've got a clear strategy and you're like, yeah, it's hypothetical until we test it, but this is where I'm placing my bet. I'm going to bet on this. And... then it's like, okay, let's try this. Whatever the tactic is, you need to give it a reasonable amount of time for you know, how long it's going to take for the tomatoes to start growing. And then get some data, get like, okay, well, like my, when I did the YouTube thing in 2019, I got some data and I was like, okay, this did something. It's not the thing I wanted it to do. I could just leave it there and people are still benefiting from it. The subscribership keeps growing. Whenever I look at it, it's more, but I just look, what I just don't think about it anymore. Every once in a while I do a live stream, but it feels, I don't know. It feels like, it doesn't feel like my thing. So it's like, okay, if you're really sensitive to your reaction, like how you feel about stuff when you do it, that can help you gravitate to tactics that do align with your strategy, but it can help you gravitate to tactics that, you know, if you're, I much prefer audio to video, much prefer it. So I'm going to gravitate to things in that area, and then I'll experiment with things in that area to see if they, and get some data, and then see if they are supporting the objective. Right. So like Clubhouse is a great example. People have been telling me, I you got to get on Clubhouse. They've been telling me since it started. And I've been really resistant for a couple of reasons that we don't need to go into. But, you know, but like Christo, our friend Chris, has been, you know, air quotes, crushing it on Clubhouse.
He has.
And it does feel like podcasting live. And I'm like, there's not really a great way to podcast live. You know, so one of the things I didn't like about it is that it doesn't, well, it didn't. I think it has changed now, which is, was just begun to change my mind. I think they have replays now so that people who weren't online at a particular, you know, weren't online to hear it live can like go back and listen to it. So I'm like, okay, if it does that, then now all of a sudden I'm kind of interested because I don't want it to just disappear. That's the thing. That's one of the big things I didn't love about Clubhouse. Plus, I'm an Android guy, and they didn't have an app. So,
well, it's one of the things that we all love about podcasts is that, of course, you can hate it if you had a bad interview, but it stays forever.
Yeah.
And people hear it when you least expect it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we barely edit. And I mean, the editing I do on the show is like nothing. It might as well be live. So it would be cool if it was live.
I love having the mute button.
That's true. I wonder, actually, we use Riverside. I think we can have it. I think there is a way to have it go. Wow, we'll have to look and see.
Oh, so, there we go. There we go. New ideas.
Yeah, right. But it's in, so it's kind of like, just giving an example of like something that's kind of in my superpower category, or at least my, you know, my frictionless category where like, you know, I've got my mic set up all the time. I don't have to like turn on the lights and like arrange the desk and all that stuff.
It's put your makeup like, on.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, my hair is always perfect, but other than
Of course.
Yeah, but I don't want to do my eyeliner.
Well, so, by the way, I just have to make this point. Lately, it seems like every podcast wants to record video. It's really been interesting. So it's like, yeah, what used to be, okay, roll out of bed, you know, grab the mic, boom, is, oh, gotta have my hair, gotta at least comb it, gotta have some makeup on.
Yeah.
Are you wearing the right colors?
Right. Yeah, I can't stand video. It's really just, I find it really distracting. But anyway, the point is, like, it's okay to take your personal preferences into these tactical decisions as long as they align with the strategy and you're not just like, oh, I'm gonna start a paid podcast or a Substack or you just like, because people are using, I heard about Substack and some people are really crushing it on Substack, so I'm going to do that. That is a totally tactical decision. And you want to have, I mean, some people will do that without even having a clear objective because they're kind of in the survive mode, and it's like anything that will maybe make me more money in as quickly as possible is a good tactic, and that's just chaos. Total chaos.
It goes back to even tactics. You want them to be strategically sound.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And so the Substack example is a great one. So Substack could be the perfect tactic if a whole set of circumstances exists and you can price it in a way that makes sense relative to your other offerings. Right. And I could see, you know, a case for that. And then the flip side is, okay, how does it compare with your other offerings? Will it cannibalize them?
Right.
Will it make sense? Will it align? Do you want to have a piece of your audience on somebody else's platform?
Yes, all those things, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and for so some people are going to ask all those questions and go, "Heck yes," and somebody else will ask those same questions and go, "Oh, heck no."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and yes. The key is to ask the questions.
Exactly. And when someone comes to me and says something like, "Should I start a paid newsletter on Substack?" I'd be like, "I don't know. What's your objective?" Mm-hmm. And they'll be like, "I don't know. Make more money." They're like, "Okay, what's the strategy for make more money?" Yeah. And they'll say, "I don't know." And I said, "Then don't start a Substack until you figure out what your strategy is." So, you know, how will that contribute, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because there's no platform that in and of itself is a bad idea, right? It's correct. Really what's going to work for you. And because you only have limited time, you've got to choose wisely.
Mm-hmm. Right. Like if you look at somebody like Gary Vee, who does something that you and I, Rochelle, both don't like. We don't like the idea of sharecropping on somebody else's platform, where Gary mm-hmm. Vee is just all over all the platforms. Yeah. So he kind of mitigates the risk in a different way. Yeah. Because the risk is that, you know, you don't own these, you don't own them anyway, but it's like not your list. It's like somebody else's customers. It's Facebook's customers. It's Instagram's customers. It's YouTube's customers. But he has flooded all of them.
Yeah, I don't worry about him. He'll be fine. No,
right. And if you had the energy to do that, then I would be a little less worried about someone who has all of their content on Medium, let's say, and not on their own website. Because it wouldn't just be Medium. It'd be like, it'd be HuffPo and Reddit and Twitter and LinkedIn articles. And it'd be just like everywhere. Yeah. But he has a big team of people that can do that.
Not a soloist. I mean, despite the name, he isn't a soloist. He's got he's got an infrastructure. So yeah, when you're a soloist, you gotta make it count.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that's really interesting is it can be really tempting if you've got a decent budget as a soloist to say, "Well, I'll just hire that out." Mm-hmm. Yeah, hire it out, but don't hire out anything that doesn't make strategic sense for your business. I mean, I've seen that happen too. Sometimes it's dangerous to have too much money in your pocket.
Yes.
Like, okay, I'll hire so-and-so to do Twitter for me and I'm going to pay $2,500 a month. And, you know, and then 6 months later, they're like, "Gee, I don't know. It just doesn't really seem to be working." Whereas if that person had really thought it through from the beginning, there might have been a way to make it work in a different way.
Yeah. So the thing that's occurring to me is some of these examples that we've been talking about in the last 5 minutes or so is that there are underneath the objective, at a deeper level than the objective, there are like values or values is a little bit overstating it, but there are certain things that are just non-starters for me. For example, across the board, and for you too.
Yeah,
for everyone, values. Sure.
Values are important.
But it's not like everyone should have a vote type of values. It's more like I'm just not going to have employees. Like just more like policy. Like so, the policy, no employees. Another policy for me is nobody else's platform. I'm not doing it. I'll build it myself. With the rarest of exceptions, mm-hmm. it's like not going to use someone else's platform. There are a few that I use that are just like prohibitively expensive to recreate and would destroy the user experience. But the portability of the data, you know, I guess another way to put it is like my customers. That's why I'm not on Amazon. That's why I'm just not super interested in some of the other social media platforms. It's like that. I don't have enough energy to flood them all. So it's like, no, they're going to come on my website. My stuff's going to be on my website. If that's
like your LinkedIn page. I mean, that's front and center what you will and will not do.
I don't even know what it says.
I don't remember. But it said something like, "I don't check messages here. Interact here. If you want me, here's my email." It's something to that effect.
Yeah. It's just my email is in my bio. It just says email me. I don't check the LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Twitter is my experimental platform where I just like drop grenades and see what happens. That's where I experiment with new ideas and stuff. So that's very useful. But I don't care. The content is irrelevant. It's not relevant to, it's not like, oh, if my Twitter feed disappeared, I wouldn't care. It'd be like, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But my daily mailing, if that disappeared, you'd find me in the fetal position under my desk. Right. So that has lots of backups. Anyway, I just wanted to point out that there's these kind of like, regardless of the objective, there's this layer of stuff that I think is probably fair to call values that, that include things like inclusivity and so forth, but also are things like, I hate video. I just don't want to do video. Yeah. It drains me. It's like triple in your litmus test for stuff. Does it drain you or does it make you stronger? Does it make you weaker or stronger? Like, video makes me weaker. So well, anyway.
There's this whole, it's really been interesting. I've been doing a lot of reading, different people writing for different sorts of businesses. And there's this whole group of people that write essentially how to move six figures to seven. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting is almost without exception, and I actually can't think of an exception other than maybe Paul Jarvis, but he didn't do an income focus for his content. But almost without exception, it's about building a business with employees. And that in order to get your first million, you got to have, you know, two employees or five employees. And to get to 10 million, you got to have 25 employees. And it's this expectation that everybody is going to follow that model. And I think what we're talking about here is that there is no one model. That's the point, is by designing the business so that it fits you, you can get to whatever income level it is that you decide you want to go for while you're sending out this message, while you're influencing people, while you're adding value to their lives, while you're making transformations that matter. You're doing all those things, but you're doing it from your genius zone. Instead of what, I don't know about you, Jonathan, but when I was in corporate America, everybody kept trying to make my weaknesses stronger. And I'm like, yeah. I don't care. I'm never going to be good at that. I want to get better at the things that I'm already good at. I'd like to be brilliant at something, then work my way to average on something I suck at.
Yeah. It's like teaching a fish to ride a bicycle. It's like, you need to learn how to ride this bike. It's like, no, I'm never going to be good at that.
No.
You know, and I'm sure you have examples. I feel like you've told me examples of people who you worked with in that organization who were way up at the very top, who were total weirdos, but were like genius at a very specific thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Practice leaders. So like thought, or I shouldn't say practice leaders, thought leaders. Those were right, usually. Internal. Yeah. We had those at the both global consulting firms that I was in. And they were, yeah, they, and when I say weirdos, I mean that in the best way. Most of them were lovable when they're, you know, idiosyncrasies. But it's, yeah, you could do that. You can't do that necessarily as a soloist. Well, you know, I take that back. You didn't used to be able to. I think now you can. It's just you have to be able to sell when you're a soloist. And the thought leaders I'm talking about, generally all they had to do was close because they had other people to bring them into the situation. Right. And then they would close the deal. So they had to have that kind of sales skills, but they weren't, you know, other than doing the things we think of as building authority, that they were writing and speaking and, you know, providing value to internal people who wanted to learn about their specialty.
Right. Yeah. So one thing I want to amplify that you said right before that was about, you know, the business model of like growing headcount and marking up their time or however you're leveraging the employees, like that, it's totally, obviously that works. It does work. But for people out there who just are like me, I think maybe even more than you, are like, payroll, you know, like that stress is just not me. So there, yeah. So I love that the way you said it was like, you know, there's no model. You like one of the beauty of working for yourself is you just have like so much flexibility, but you do have to make a decision. So it's like all the things in the world, but you got to decide. And the objective, usually people can set an objective. Even if nothing else, they can say, oh, I want to make $1 million this year. And then, you know, my question always is like, great. And that means you need to create about $10 million of value for clients and customers. So how are you going to do that? And they're like, and that's where the strategy comes in. So it's like, okay, let's talk about that. But, you know, so at some point you have to take all of this wonderful flexibility that the self-employed enjoy. And you got to say, okay, here's this huge category of stuff I'm not going to do. Here's this other huge category of stuff I'm not going to do. Here's the specific objective that I've got, at least for the next year or three. And here's a strategy I'm going to try for a year. And then everything else. This is why strategy, a lot of times people say strategy is what not to do. You know, I think Steve Jobs said that. It's true. It's like, or he's, what does he say? Good design is saying no to 1,000 things. And how do you know what to say no to? Well, you've got a clear strategy. So, you know, whether or not, well, whatever. It's going to go into bad Apple decisions when he wasn't there. But anyway.
Well, yeah. And there's this other thing that I think Mike Michalowicz in Profit First said really, or he made his point pretty well over the course of the book, is that a lot of people, and I was this way when I started my first boutique consulting business, is we're all about the growth, right? We want to grow the business. We want to grow the business. So how do you grow the business? You hire employees. You invest in new things, new technology. But if you're not, his point was, if you're not paying attention, you're going to keep reinvesting your profits instead of paying yourself or paying the owners. It's not generally a problem we see with our kinds of people, but it's, I just want to mention it because it's a temptation when you start to get on that train of hiring employees, whether they're, you're using them to leverage, i.e. you're billing them out at X and you're collecting Y, or you're using them to run the infrastructure behind like a membership program. As an example, you just right. want to really be careful about how you think about growth when it comes to your business.
Yeah, that's a huge hot button. I could talk about that for an hour alone. It's like vanity metrics and profit and like, it's like, oh, you know, did 10 million. It's like, yeah, but how much did you spend? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like 11. Okay. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I always had this feeling like we would have a terrific year in the 6 years I had this business. We would have, you know, a terrific year and I'd be going, but I didn't make any more money. Like mm-hmm. I should be making some money, but I'd be investing in the next thing. There was always something else to invest in.
Yeah.
And yeah. And then you kind of kick yourself if you don't, because you wonder, so if I don't invest in this, you know, what's going to happen? Does it mean we can't grow as fast? Does it mean that our revenue is going to top out? And at that point, I wasn't really thinking about somebody buying us. But, you know, later I did. It's like, does that make us more attractive or less attractive? Yeah.
Right. Well, geez, that's probably a lot to chew on. I feel like we're...
I think we gave them multiple rabbit hole choices today.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. It's starting to feel like we're making things more confusing, so we better shut up.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I guess that's it for this week. And how do you end the show?
I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Rochelle Moulton. That's pretty funny.
And we hope you'll join us next time for The Business of Authority. Bye.
Bye. You always say bye-bye.
I know. It was perfect.